It's In Goal Radio, the podcast presented by The Hockey Shop, source for sports Langley, thehockeyshop.com. David Hutchison, Kevin Woodley are standing by as we have a jam-packed episode today. Our feature interview presented by NHL Sense Arena will serve up Scott Wedgwood, who has had a remarkably adventurous journey and really settled into a home with the Dallas Stars, who are challenging for the President's Trophy right now. Our gear segment is going to focus on certified cat eye cages. That's presented by The Hockey Shop. And the parent segment is going to dial in on, does my goaltender need to play spring hockey? The parent segment brought to you by GDI USA. As we say hello and look around the stretch drive of the National Hockey League, gentlemen, are you excited? Are you like taking a last minute breather? Where are you in your hockey consumption right now, Woody?
I am somewhere between excited and a little bit of dog days, because we're kind of caught in between, like the games matter, but you're looking ahead, you know, that little window where
exactly.
You're still chasing a spot in terms of where you rank, but I just wanted to start. And I know the players can't afford to be like that, although I think some of them certainly are. Some of them, frankly, have admitted to me that they are. It's human nature to lose focus on the day-to-day, especially if you haven't been in them in a while. And let me tell you, here in Vancouver, we ain't been in them in a while. At least the one they qualified, if you count it, the bubble playoff, play-in, whatever the hell it was, wasn't in Vancouver. Do you know there has not been a home playoff game in Vancouver since 2015, the year before Brock Besser was drafted? None of their core was even part of this organization the last time we had a playoff game in Vancouver. So I'm just a little jacked to cover it, to feel that energy, to sort of see that crowd. And I got to do it in Seattle last year, and it was like a breath of fresh air. I love it.
And Hutch, you're in the midst of playoffs with Little Hutch, so you're getting a step up on us.
I was going to say, I get that it's dog days for people in the NHL circles, guys, but NCAA is down to one and done playoff hockey right now. CHL hockey is into the playoffs, which just started this week. There's a lot of really cool stuff happening at other levels of hockey, and I'm really enjoying all of it.
We have also spring hockey that we'll discuss in the parent segment. And for those that maybe have their season done already, you take a step back, maybe just get a little reflection. But if you want to stay into it, NHL Sense Arena is a good opportunity if the ice time's just not available right now because everybody is gearing in the playoffs, maybe in your same stratosphere.
Absolutely. Look, whether you're playing spring hockey this year or not, and if you are, maybe you're going to be warming up before your games with a few drills in the virtual world of NHL Sense Arena, or maybe you've chosen to try something different for a few months now that your season's done, in which case Sense Arena can give you a chance to hit the ice for a few minutes every day, maybe to stay sharp, maybe just to have fun, guys. You can have fun facing NHL and PWHA shooters. You can have fun on an outdoor rink. You can have fun trying challenging hand-eye coordination drills. And you can have fun challenging your friends with some of the competitive opportunities in Sense Arena as well. So NHL Sense Arena is an awesome opportunity to keep your skill sharp this spring, this summer. I was thinking, guys, since NHL Sense Arena is so safe, they should add a mode where you're just in your beach wear, sunglasses, virtual rink on the beach. Wouldn't it be pretty sweet? I think it'd be a whole lot of fun to try. So if you want to give Sense Arena a try, if you haven't yet, guys, head over to sensearena.com. If you've already got a headset, you can get a free trial. If you haven't, you can get it through them. Great deals on now. Use that code IGM50 and you'll save even more.
I got pictures of me with the surf in the background, using Sense Arena, you know, people riding waves in behind me. So absolutely you can. We need to bring it into the game, I get, is what you're saying. Didn't we see a college? I can't remember who it was. There was a college kid that was using Sense Arena. You mentioned the playoffs going on in NCAA hockey. We saw a college kid warming up with it ahead of his game. I saw it on social media just last week. So remember, kids, you don't have to just use it at home. It can be a very valuable tool at the rink as well.
Certified cat cages coming up in our gear segment presented by The Hockey Shop. But did you guys see the article on NHL.com regarding Marc-Andre Fleury and his potential return for next year? All indications had been pointed towards this being his final season, but there's an opening right now, Hutch, for the legend to return and carry on his career.
Yeah, it sure looks like he's opened the door, hasn't he? He even mentioned that he'd brought in friends and family to Montreal to watch him play in case it was his last game in the Bell Center, and was maybe leaning towards it because he wasn't having fun. That's what we were just talking about, and we will talk about in the spring hockey segment. And now he's having fun again, and he's having a whole lot of success. And we've said it so many times, the NHL is way better when Marc-Andre Fleury is out there playing and showing us all how to have fun. And let's not forget, be competitive, because he mentioned what a competitive person he is as well. So I'd love to see him back, but maybe that makes things challenging for Minnesota, doesn't it, Woody?
Great young up-and-coming goaltender. That little name Jesper Wallstedt might have something. Like, I got to think the development plan for him includes the National Hockey League next year. Obviously, Philip Gustafson took a bit of a step back this year in terms of consistency, but is still showing when he's on, he's capable of high-level performances. In terms of Fleury, and obviously he said he wants to kind of Minnesota or bust, I'd love to see him again. Is there a spot? Get the band back together in Pittsburgh for one last run. But whether there is, wasn't there, whether there isn't, the one thing I got to say throughout, even when things weren't necessarily as fun, and he also mentioned the competitive fire he has and mm-hmm. how maybe behind that smile, we forget how important that is, and he's rediscovered that. But his numbers have been great. Even when the raw numbers weren't great, the underlying work, he was outperforming a tough environment. That's just the job of a backup. When he was in sort of a pure backup role earlier this season, he gets the tough start. And so the raw numbers aren't going to look good. But now that as he's gotten a chance to play more, other people are seeing what the underlying numbers were saying all along. Marc-Andre Fleury, whether he gets the opportunity, wherever it is, whether he gets to stay in Minnesota, he can still play.
Money will not be a factor. He stated that. And I wonder, can you go with a 2.5 goalie situation with Wallstedt playing some in the National Hockey League? And when there's a gap in the schedule, he plays in Iowa in the American Hockey League. Can you go with something like that? Florida Panthers kind of went down that path a couple of years ago.
It's how the Nashville Predators broke UC Saros into the NHL. It's how the Columbus Blue Jackets broke Jonas Korpisalo into the NHL. When there were long stretches where he wasn't playing, they would send those guys down to the American League. Like, hey, I've got a game on Saturday night in Minnesota. I know that somebody else is playing it. I send Jesper Wallstedt to Iowa for the weekend where they probably play three games and he gets two of them. So instead of sitting on the bench in Minnesota, he goes down to the American League and gets two games. And then when it is his turn, maybe a few days or a week later, he hasn't sat on, you know, a start for 2 weeks. The problem there is usually when teams are doing that, the third guy that's going back and forth is kind of like a career AHL guy, because all he's doing is coming up for the weekend to sit on the bench behind your starter. So finding minutes for three guys in the NHL, as the Montreal Canadiens will tell you this year, like, you can do it. The ones that are up and coming tend to be okay with it. The ones that are not up and coming, see Jake Allen's comments since arriving with the Devils, a little less so.
I guarantee the two most interested people in that article were Gustafson and Wallstedt. Watching that going, where are we going? And admittedly, the Minnesota Wild are going to take their time in sorting this out after the season. Interesting situation in Philadelphia, as that scenario has played out with the goaltender coming over from Russia. I call him the goaltender because I don't want to influence Woody here. The accent on the particular syllable changes how we pronounce the Russian name. We don't know him, Ivan, very comfortably. So how do we pronounce his last name?
Fedotov is what I've been told. And the reason I was told that is I was on a Philadelphia program yesterday discussing the transition from the KHL to the NHL, because the Flyers are in the middle of a playoff race. They are playing the wheels off Samuel Erickson because they don't trust the other options right now, because the other options have struggled. Listen, Philly is not a great defensive team at this point in the season. They give up a lot. It's a lot of ass. So a lot of people in Philadelphia see this. And this is interesting too, Darren, because he used to be listed at 6'8", and I've seen a lot of goalie people been like, oh, he's now the tallest goalie in the NHL, but it looks like the Flyers are listing him at 6'7".
I take it he said it himself was 6'7".
There you go. So not the tall, like right there with
Ben Bishop. Well, it's a long flight from Russia. Like, there's shrinkage there.
No, it's just like everything else, it gets inflated around draft time. So anyways, not setting a new record for the tallest goalie in the NHL just yet. 6'7", which I believe is what the same as Ben Bishop. And who else is 6'7" right now in the league? Anyways.
Not in the league, but was in the league in Edmonton.
Mr. Koskinen.
Mm-hmm.
Mikko. Yeah. So anyway, Fedotov is how you pronounce it. And for everyone in Philadelphia, that's like, just throw him in like today, basically, as we record this against the Connor Bedard Chicago Blackhawks. KHL hockey for a goaltender compared to the NHL is almost a different sport.
How so?
None of the traffic, none of the funneling of pucks to the net. It is all pass, dust it off from a wide open look in the slot and pass it again. I know the game's changed. It's evolved over in Russia and we've become an East-West league. And you can certainly go to Russia and work on things in terms of patience and skating and edge work and not committing early on all that passing that will benefit you coming back here. But the adjustment period in terms of the traffic and how direct and fast everything is, not to mention rink size and how quickly plays get on top of you. Not many do it at the snap of a fingers mid-season. He just arrived. I don't even know. You saw him with the Bauer pads and the True gloves. There was some talk that he was wearing True gloves. The pictures I saw were Bauer gloves when he was overseas. Some talk he was already wearing True gloves. But my understanding for someone in Philly is those weren't even his gloves. None of his equipment that he was wearing in Russia would have gone through through NHL offices yet for approval. That would all need to happen. Like, you don't just come from Russia midseason and pop into the net the next day. Maybe he does, and maybe he surprises us all, and he's the exception to the rule. But Igor Shesterkin was half a season in the American League. Ilya Sorokin went straight to the NHL, but people forget he was not allowed to play in the bubble, but it was around the team for the entire bubble experience the year before his debut. Then had an entire training camp, and then admitted it took him 2 weeks to get comfortable with the pace before he started playing like himself. So to expect this kid, I just think in Philly, they're like, throw him in. And I'm like, I don't know that that's really the best idea, even if you may not have a lot of other
options. The Flyers have made it sound like they're going to throw him in.
He's their backup. You can't play Arison every night, although they've tried. And so maybe they will. I just feel like that's a big ask. That's all. It's a really big ask for the kid to do that. Even though he's not a kid, he's 28 years old. He's mature. I've got a scouting report from somebody who actually coached against him, a KHL goaltender coach, walked me through the ups and downs of his game. And there's a lot to like there. Just a lot to ask to do it in short notice at the National Hockey League level.
That does give them some insurance and a little bit of depth going into last year without Carter Hart within the organization. And he's a free agent. So. We'll follow that one. Before we get to the gear segment and certified cat eye cages presented by the Hockey Shop, a really fun story following the Vegas Golden Knights and the just elevated play of Logan Thompson in the absence of Aiden Hill. Like, it's been remarkable what he's been able to do.
Was he rolled out a 975 since everybody predicted the demise of the Golden Knights because Aiden was hurt and they had a road trip from hell with the season on the line? Like,
yeah.
Talk about stepping up. Penalty shot in overtime. Enough mustard on that glove save on the penalty shot to cover my hot dogs for the next decade. Thing beauty. Just absolutely love the swagger on that one, LT. Yeah, like what a great job. I think we've always known that's there, right? It's just been tough at times to see it consistently, maybe because you're not playing consistently, but we look at technique, we look at sort of skill set. We never get to see inside an athlete's mind, but you get these checks along the way to see how they handle big moments. And that was, man, this has been really impressive because I think a lot of people from the outside looked at what was going to happen and saw Vegas going into St. Louis chasing them. Playing really well. What are they? 7-1-1 in their last 9 back to back. I know it was Patera on the second end of the back to back. And then into Minnesota, like tough road trip, tons of stakes. And Logan Thompson's been brilliant.
He outdueled Connor Hellebuck in the game in Winnipeg, only allowed 1 goal, 4 straight starts in which he's only allowed 1 goal. And there's something to be said, no moment's too big for him. And that confidence, and you can interpret it any way, but. He loves the stage and Hutch. There's that fine line, but being ready for that moment and embracing that moment and not shying away or showing any type of intimidation for the moment. I wish I had it. I wish I had it in life in that regard, the way that Logan Thompson's able to handle.
No, it's remarkable. And we need somebody to tell us how to package that so we can all develop that.
Like, yeah.
It's not something you can just decide you're going to be. It's got to be something you've developed, and to have that swagger to come in. And what an opportunity for Vegas to have somebody who can step up like that and shine in a big moment. And you have to think that this is only going to reinforce that feeling in him. So he's probably going to go from strength to strength. Things are looking up.
We will see what happens as far as the availability of Aiden Hill, but it does give them some added confidence that there's a little more there in the absence of the goaltender that won the Stanley Cup for them last year, Woody.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, big week for Brock alumni. Logan Thompson,
that's right.
And then Connor Unger after 1 year at Brock University, the Canadian U Sports representing at the National Hockey League level, attaboy LT, and then Connor Unger gets a contract with the Edmonton Oilers. So, you know, I know we all talk about undrafted free agent goalies out of the NCAA, and we'll have news on them coming shortly, I'm sure, as we've had a few signings there already, and there's more to come. But nice to see that the league up here in Canada doesn't get ignored as well. So Connor Unger starting with the Edmonton Oilers, his pro career as well. So big week for Brock.
Very underrated hockey.
Yeah. And
sports.
Maybe just clearing more of a path, right? And instead of just one player going through, you got multiple, and it just widens the lane.
I think it'll open eyes. We've said it before. You can come out of Europe at 24, 25 years old and get a boatload of opportunities. But if you come out of U Sports at 24, 25, people have decided that you're washed up. So I'm glad that's opening.
The irony there is we're seeing the opportunities present in the National Hockey League. There were pro opportunities all along for kids coming out of U Sports. They just ironically were in Europe most of the time.
Yeah, that's right.
We've got our feature interview talking to Scott Wedgwood, that brought to you by Sense Arena. But let's get over to our gear segment, certified cat ages.
Let's get over to our gear.
I can't say that. Certified cat eye cages, brought to you by The Hockey Shop, source for sports, Langley, thehockeyshop.com. I don't know why I'm bumbling and stumbling over that today.
Because you're in America where you don't require a certified cat eye cage. You just get to throw on the OG certified. So it like your body physically rejects the concept
of a certified type of restriction. I'm not going to do it.
Exactly. Now, listen, they've come a long way, Darren, which is one of the reasons we wanted to revisit it. Cam, and I'm going to let him talk about this. There's a goalie coach there that's looking for a specific type from all his students. He wants them in this. He thinks it improves their vision. So we decided it was time to talk about it, to let goalies know, and goalie parents in particular, know that there are other options up in Canada other than the straight bar. For those of us that are in beer league, we go down to the real cat eye, even if we're not supposed to. But maybe you've got a beer league where they're a little more restrictive, where they actually check to see if your equipment is properly certified. We've got some options for you today at the Hockey Shop. Let's let Cam walk us through them.
Welcome back to the Hockey Shop, source for sports. I'm here in Goalie Utopia with Cam Matwiv, playing a little dress up. We're here to talk to you about cages.
Yes. Not often talked about, but often asked for. And as of late, even had some goalie coaches requesting certified cat eyes.
Regular certified straight bar.
Certified cat eye.
So, certified cat eye.
For starters, just to clear up the muddy waters, this is totally legal for any minor hockey within Canada. That's why it's called the certified cat eye. So they add extra bars here to make sure that, A, you can't get that stick blade through, as well as to cover up a little bit of that extra openness that would be on a regular cat eye. So why would you want one of these? Well, vision. So as you can see,
I can see him poking me in the eyes.
So your straight ahead vision, that's what we're talking about here. So as you're looking and following that puck, there's less bars in your face, in your eyes, cutting off your sight lines. We don't want that. So that's why they've created that opening. Very, very popular with European goalies that we've kind of noticed. And some of that is now transferred over into our market as well. I mean, these have been around for a little while. This isn't the first time we've seen one of these things. That said, it seems to be becoming a little bit more prevalent. We are seen to be selling more and more of them. So there must be something behind it. Kevin, what do you think of your vision so far?
It's good. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. Nobody call Health Canada, but I have a actual cat eye for Beer League. Nobody checks. I actually, if we'd shot this a month ago, there would have been a little nick, little cut, because the reality is player stick blade does fit through there, as I found out the hard way, and it's a little bit scary, but I'm not the brightest guy, so I continue to wear it. If you need to be in a certified cage, this is a great option. We're not saying it's for everyone. Like, I actually used to wear the straight bar and had no problems with it. But as we are hearing, I guess Cam said, from goalies in Europe, it's very popular. Yep. Goalie coaches are starting to send them in to see Cam. And so, you know, we see it here as a stock option on the Bauer one.
Yes.
There's a Warrior there with the stock option. We've got it for CCM. So again, like, just something if goalies want to explore, maybe different sight lines. I feel like there is more material here on the periphery than we might see on this one. But straight ahead vision seems to be pretty good. So it's an option. And Cam's got it for a variety of different masks here in stock or online at thehockeyshop.com.
So what we want you guys to do is let us know in the comments below. Which one do you prefer? Do you wear a certified cat eye? Why do you wear a certified cat eye? Do you find it's better? See, just some user engagement, you know. Viewers, they want, you know, comment below. You can ask me more questions about this at 604-589-8299 or 1-800-567-7790. Or you can check the cages out at thehockeyshop.com.
Somebody was just calling you.
Yes. How about a certified cat eye cage? Hello?
Go get the phone, Cam.
That's why you go to the hockey shop, because they can walk you through something like these certified cat eye cages.
You know why else you go to the hockey shop? Because they got sales. Spring break sale is on right now. You also go there for the new gear, and we've rolled out a bunch of it in recent weeks. Hey, did you guys see the video? We had a true Project X stick, which we reviewed last week. Score a goal in minor hockey. I try to remember the gentleman that tagged us in it. His son scored. It might have been in Alberta. But he was using the brand new true Project X, and his kid got a goal. Dad's a goalie too. He said he's been searching for one his whole career. And now his son has, I think it was even featured on the Global News, did a little segment on it because they caught it on video. So goalie goals, we love those. When they feature equipment that we've reviewed, we love those too. You can get your own Project X stick at the hockey shop or thehockeyshop.com. You can also check them out, like I said, at spring break sale, 25% off a lot of the Bauer product as they get ready for the new Shadow line, which I saw up close with Jake Ottinger in the Dallas Stars locker room this week. It's on its way. You can already go on the customizer and order it. And so Cam's got the old stuff, the stuff it replaces on clearance, 25% off. Also includes like chest, pants, all kinds of equipment from Bauer on 25% off as part of the spring break sale at the hockey shop and thehockeyshop.com.
Which is a great segue into our parent segment brought to you by GDI USA. And there's an interesting, timely conversation that's taking place regarding spring hockey right now, Hutch.
There sure is. And before that, I just want to welcome the first of several new coaches program partners, GDI USA, who are presenting today's parent segment. And they're going to be with us throughout this season in some form or another, as they also choose to deliver InGoal magazine subscriptions to many of their students. GDI offers an array of programming at the national, including national and regional development camps this summer, mid-season tune-ups in the winter, year-round specialty clinics, consultation, advising, game and video assessments, really everything you need to learn, develop, and thrive through the course of your career. So visit gdiusa.us and check them out. And there'll be some links in the show notes, and there'll be some information in this week's newsletter as well. Okay, boys, parent segment. Does my goalie need to play spring hockey, or is it time for a spring break?
I don't have a young goalie. I don't have an answer. I know I need a break by this time of the year. So,
yeah. Well, look, for me, it definitely, maybe it's a little bit late right now for some families to consider this, but maybe it's a good time just to be thinking about it as well. And maybe for next year as well. Do you have to play spring hockey? Options have sprung up everywhere. And there's a bit of a fear of missing out with parents as they worry that maybe their son or daughter will be left behind if they don't jump into spring hockey experiences. So just to share my thoughts, I would say don't feel you have to, but it's also okay if you choose to. But do play other sports. How many NHL goalie coaches, guys, have told us kids can't catch anymore? How many have told us that it's really important to be an athlete first? And by the way, if you do play other sports, don't feel that pressure to go play at the rep level. Do you remember years ago, guys, Adam Francilli on the podcast told us that he thinks it's important that you go out and play a sport not at the rep level. And why is that? So that you can just focus on exploring your athleticism and not, it's not all about winning. Just go out there and have fun and be an athlete. So, but back to spring hockey. First off, it's a business and it's generally expensive. And that doesn't mean it's a bad thing. Someone's providing an experience for your kid and it's okay to run a business. But I would suggest that you go out there and evaluate it, guys, like a business as well. Is it good value for the money? In general, you're not getting a whole lot of goalie development in most spring programs. So to me, it's all about the games. How many games is your kid going to play for that money that you're spending on spring hockey? Also ask yourself, what does your goalie need the most right now? Did they play a whole season without much goalie coaching? If that's the case, then maybe the money you're thinking about spending on spring hockey would be better spent on private coaching or maybe some really good camps, something like that. Build up those goalie skills when you haven't had the opportunity in season. On the other hand, if they were with a team that gave you some great goalie development and you feel like their skills have progressed a lot this year, then maybe you do need to take some time and just get out there and play some games, and then maybe spring hockey's for you. My son has had many opportunities to play spring hockey over the years, and sometimes when it was a unique opportunity, like a different level of competitiveness, different group of friends or something, then we had him play. And there were other years we just didn't think the value was there for him. It wasn't the right thing, so he didn't play. We passed up an expensive trip to California one time because it was going to be a whole lot of money and there'd be two goalies there, and that's a lot of money to play two or three games. One year when he was really young, and this is a big caution, parents, you could see he was burning out. You could see he was not happy at the rink. And so we just pulled him out of hockey. He went and played house baseball and had the time of his life. And later on, we said, you don't even have to go back to hockey if you don't want to. But after a nice long break, he was ready and it was his choice. And this year, playing at the CHL level, admittedly, it's the longest season he's ever experienced. The gear's going away when he comes back. He's going to play house league baseball. He's going to hit the golf course a whole lot. The most important thing when you're making your spring hockey decision, everybody, is make sure your kid's having fun. Make sure they continue to enjoy the game when next season comes along. That's my two cents, boys.
Well, if Carey Price needed to put the gear away every summer until August because he felt it reinvigorated him when he hit the ice, there's a lesson there. Obviously, not every kid's playing as much as he did when he was at the Montreal Canadiens, but it's one I always reflect on. One we've heard more and more was in the Dallas Stars locker room this week. Jake Oettinger, a little bit of a forced time off the ice. He had the surgery last offseason that a lot of people didn't know about, but he felt better for it going into the season, having had that break for the first time in his in his career. So the one question I had, but Hutch, the coach says if I don't play spring hockey, I'm not going to have a chance to make the rep team next year because all the other kids on the rep team are playing spring hockey this year.
Yeah. Look, if I don't even know how to respond if you're tied up in a political situation where it's the same coach. That would be tragic. I can tell you that I've seen a whole lot of goaltenders play high-level spring hockey over the years that are no longer in the game. So it's a long-term play, and I would be very sad for you if you're in a situation where you really feel that pressure. And somebody really wants to have a chat about it and reach out, feel free to talk to a whole lot of parents as they make some of these decisions, and you can reach us, parents, at ingoalmag.com.
One statement, one question. I think this is the statement. Every player, goaltender or skater, should have a first skate of the year, which means you've stepped away from the game for a little while. You shouldn't just go all year and never experience that joy of walking back into the rink for the first time in a while. That's part of regenerating your enthusiasm for the game. And that goes for every sport because some other sports can go year round too. The question is, if you are going to play spring hockey, and you're a goaltender, should you be looking at a good team or a team where you're going to get more shots? Because it's spring hockey, maybe a team that's not going to be on the upper echelon is better for you as a goalie.
I think that probably is an entire parent segment because it relates to next season as well. And it's a question we've had here over the years many times. I would say it's a really hard question to answer, Darren. And I would also go back to why are you choosing spring hockey? If it's about the games, then playing on a really, really good team where you see 15 shots a game is probably not a great experience for you. If it's about something more than just the games, playing on a really good team, you're going to face those really good players every day in practice. So there's advantages on both sides of it. I think it really depends on the scenario. And I think we'll revisit that one maybe closer to the season as people are looking towards what they might do this year.
Fun stuff. Great insight from our goalie parent in David Hutchison. Well, let's get over to our NHL Sense Arena feature interview, Scott Wedgwood. And this has been a journey. You know, he signed with three different organizations 3 years in a row, like free agent, free agent, free agent. And now that he's in his early 30s, he's really developed a home in Dallas. But for a third round pick, he had to find his way to this stability right now. It's a really fun and impactful process that he went through.
Yeah, and we've been through, we've had him on once before, and we walked through as he was going through that and settling in Dallas and putting up really good, like putting up really good numbers to get that opportunity. Again, this is one of those situations where I was seeing the underlying numbers. They were really impressive. Sometimes when you're in a backup role, the raw numbers don't jump out as much because you're getting the tough starts. Like, and so this was just a chance to catch up with him and just sort of talk goaltending as opposed to getting into his whole backstory. For the backstory, I recommend people really recommend because it was a great interview. Go back and listen to the first time we had him on. But man, no shortage of insights here. We ended up going a full 40 minutes on what we planned to be 20. And he shared all kinds of, right down to technical advice, when to look up the puck. Do you do it as well or as often as Scott Wedgwood, a guy who relies on, you know, sort of his athleticism as well as technique, but not the biggest goalie. We got into his relationship with Jake Oettinger because they are different goalies, how they play off each other. Some mindset stuff, some incredible hydration tips from him. This thing is loaded with great advice. And the favorite kind of advice, it applies at every level. You don't need to be in the NHL for what Scott Wedgwood has to say today to resonate and help you become a better goalie. It's he's a beauty. He's a new dad. We get into that. Just a really fun interview and so happy that Scott made the time on this road trip to reconnect with us.
Awesome stuff. NHL Sense Arena feature interview, Scott Wedgwood of the Dallas Stars on In Goal Radio, the podcast.
Really excited to welcome back to the In Goal Radio podcast, the guy that I always enjoy catching up with anytime the Dallas Stars are coming through town. And this weekend was no different. Scott Wedgwood of the Dallas Stars, new dad, Scott Wedgwood of the Dallas Stars. Scott, how are you? Has that dad strength kicked in yet?
That was the first thing I asked when I left the hospital. Like, when should I expect this? But no, I'm doing good. Obviously, tough. We got mom and baby home 3 days after the baby was born via C-section. Then I took off for a 7-day road trip. So one more game against the Kraken tomorrow, and then we land late Sunday morning. But yeah, excited to get back to them. It's been an interesting, obviously, week, and super excited and emotional with all the things going on. But really good support system, real good family. Everyone's obviously eager to meet her, and it's been something we've been obviously hoping for and looking forward to all year. So it's now it's here. It's been a whirlwind.
Well, I mean, the smile on your face yesterday as we talked, you know, about going through that and parenthood, like, was about as wide as I've seen at any point in the NHL, and I've covered a couple of cup finals and winners, so I know how much you're enjoying it. I also know that is a tough, I'm not sure that enough people understand just how tough that is. Hey, listen, you guys are professional athletes, you're compensated well, but having to be away from moments like that at times like that from family is part of the job that I'm not sure enough people appreciate how hard it can be.
Yeah, you know, I was feeling for Heiskanen this year. We were in New York and his wife gave birth, and I think he left, you know, less than 2 days after baby was, you know, just introduced to the world. We were shorthanded D-man. We were shorthanded on injuries, and he was kind of, you know, asked, and, you know, he made do for the team. So he stepped up there. But yeah, that first night I flew into Arizona a day later just to meet on game day. I was going to bed that night when we got to the hotel, and, you know, I'm an emotional guy, but, you know, a few tears in the eyes, and we have obviously baby cameras and stuff I can check in on and all that stuff. But I'm just, you know, what's she thinking? What's she doing? And it's just, it's crazy. And now everyone says it, but it just kind of, it takes you over, and it's, you know, feeling for her, feeling for mom. Obviously, we got some help in town, which is nice for them. But obviously, was trying to pull my weight when I was around, and I'll have to pick it up, obviously, Sunday when I get back for sure.
Okay, now the one thing we do hear from new parents, perspective. We can, as goalies at every level, but especially yours at the highest level of the game, we can tend to live and die a little bit on results and how we're playing and what goes on at the rink. Does it, I mean, it's early, right? Like, you've only been a dad for a little while here, but does it sort of put some things in perspective for you? Can it be something that, you know, you look at and it's like, okay, like, yes, my job is super, super important and I want to be the best at it, but there are other things in life.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've only played in one game and we won it. So that was a good start. But no, I mean, I, you know, wear my heart on my sleeve and want to be good every night. And obviously that's not the case in this position, but yeah, obviously getting home to the dogs for, you know, the last few years has always been one thing where they don't care. And now obviously with a baby, she won't understand it either. And I'm sure that'll be, you know, something as kind of like the mental toughness, right? You're going to have to work on it and obviously not want to bring anything home and bring a bad attitude or anything like that. But, no, I think, you know, just off the top of my head, thinking about how it's going to go, I mean, walking in, seeing her regardless, win or lose. And I think that's, you know, probably top to bottom with a lot of the guys in the league. It just, completely rewrites your hardwiring and to definitely a lot more to it. And just now it's all about her and keeping her healthy and happy. And then, you know, obviously play this game as long as I can so she can hopefully, get to see it and remember it as life goes on. It's obviously been my whole, you know, personality in life and want to be able to share that with her as long as possible.
Okay. So we've had you on before. I mentioned welcoming you back to the podcast. It's been almost 2 years since we last talked to you in this format. So I'm going to highly recommend everybody go back and check out episode 183, but it also means Scott is off the hook a little bit today in terms of, man, when we get you on for the first time, I think I really made you deep dive into the history and the roots of the position. And you were so great with it. This time we just want to focus on like the last couple of years, some of the lessons that you've taken away as you've established yourself and sort of found a home with the Dallas Stars, working with Jeff Vries. You know, maybe let's start with Jake Oettinger's there. Great up and coming young goaltender in the National Hockey League. Your role working with him, obviously competing to be the best you can be when you play, but also working with a young goalie who's breaking into the league. What kind of advice, what kind of lessons have you learned, maybe even from Jake, in terms of him doing a few things probably different than yourself?
I think what's worked so well is as soon as I got here, it was kind of, you know, I got a couple lifelines off waivers, a couple late trades, and was able to kind of claw my way and stick and keep my head above water for a long time. And then, you know, when Dallas picked me up, I think I only played 7 or 8 games for them there before the first round against Calgary. And as soon as I came in, you know, I was close with Tyler Seguin my whole life. And he was like, man, we got this stud young guy in Oettinger and he wants to play every night, but he's got to understand that he can't. And that was kind of the first thing that Seguin told me. And then obviously I met him and saw him play and he's an absolute stud. So it was, you know, one of those situations where I was like, listen, like I'm, you know, at that time, 29, turning 30. I just want my own job. I want to stick. I want to be in the National Hockey League. I want to stay. And I think, I don't know what his perspective was when they traded for me, obviously an older guy. But I'm sure that they had reiterated to him, like, hey, like, you're going to be the guy, you're going to be the future. We're going to base this around you. And our early conversations were like, dude, like, I don't want your job right now. I don't even have my own. So I think that kind of groundwork of me just being like, hey, like, I'm going to play when they tell me to play. And I'm obviously going to do my very best to earn more ice time, but I'm not here to, you know, overshadow you or try and, you know, hope that you do poorly so I can get in the net. And I feel like early on in a lot of careers, that kind of is the AHL way of, you know, it's tough to find great partners. And I think with just that early backstory between the two of us and communication, you know, we were obviously talking as his contract's up next year, mine's up this year. And you just kind of play GM in your head. He's like, you're not going anywhere. He's like, I've never had a partner that, you know, we get 4+5 X amount of years together, how great that would be. And the way that we both, you know, work well with Jeff Vries and, you know, kind of being able to share that net a little bit more this year with him getting a little bit of a workload last year and, you know, maybe wearing on him a little bit more than anybody would have liked with me being out. But, you know, like you said, that ability to be good partners, to play and just kind of coexist has been, I think, what makes us both, you know, tick so well.
You know, Jake's a student of the position. Your appearance with us on Pro Reads, how you saw the game, how well you read and anticipated things was a real treat. Are you guys comparing notes? Like, as much as you play different games and Reeser probably works with each of you in different ways at times, are there, you know, do you have one of those relationships where there is a lot of back and forth, a lot of communication in terms of what you're seeing out there, what might work here or what might work there?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, obviously, I'm aggressive, use my feet and kind of make guys miss. And he's, you know, a big body where he kind of says, you know, if you're going to beat me, you got to beat me perfectly, and just gets, I wouldn't say he gets hit because he's still reactive, but he obviously can use his size to a better advantage than I can. And there'll be times with like a screenshot and like a shifting, you know, butterfly save, and it just hits me and sticks to me, and I'll call it my otter save just because I don't have to catch it. But, you know, we talk in between, you know, TV timeouts and stuff, and I'll come over and I'll make a stand-up glove save, and he'll be laughing. He's like, I don't know how you do that. I'm just standing straight up making a glove save, a guy underneath the hash marks. And, you know, he's probably more or less in a push off a reverse or kind of the way he plays it. But, you know, there's times where we've both asked each other questions, just, you know, he guys walk out of the corner. I tend to overlap. He likes to sit inside a reverse, and he's got everything covered. And if I go into reverse, they got half the top corner. So obviously very different in technical abilities and technical reads. But I think it's just interesting with, you know, the way that the team plays for us both doesn't really change. It's more just, I think the two of us see things a little bit differently of how we would approach it. And then if, you know, things go wrong, there's questions to be asked. You know, I get in a reverse. I don't like the way I push off on one side, or sometimes I grab skate, or, you know, I get a guy coming down a wing that's going to look short side and do a wraparound. He integrates, I stay out, but then I got a harder push. He integrates, they try and go short side shoulder. So it's like we give up different options. So it's almost like a different look every time. And then when we're rotating in drills, like it's almost like confusing for the players because you're going to have just completely different looks. And then obviously they're going to face different goalies. But I think there's a good back and forth just in the fact that we play the game so differently. It's almost like, would I benefit from that, or would he benefit from this? And we try it. I mean, that's the nice thing about having almost two different ways of being playing. It's times where he likes to be aggressive and try what I do and just get hit. And then there's other times where I want to sit back and try and use size and see if I can, you know, be a little bit better at just kind of taking away angles and not having to force myself to feel like I have to get everything so clean.
I love that. And within that, I wonder how much as like you said, you know, there are situations where you can't play it the same way as him, just from a square footage standpoint, right? Like it's funny because being in the locker room last night after you guys clinched another playoff spot, congratulations, by the way, on that. I forgot how big he was. I almost forgot just how big Jake was. And, you know, so there's times where you're not going to get a shoulder to the crossbar. And yet, do you think it being able to do things different ways, not just to your strengths, but sometimes just, you know, like in practice, a different look? Have we seen it? Is there any value in unpredictability at times for shooters to maybe get a different look here and there for, you know, this young generation that's coming up expecting the same thing perhaps every time from goalies they're facing?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, with the new ish age of the reverse, and, you know, I think a lot of the times if guys get below the, you know, face off dots or bottom of the circles, everyone's almost in that reverse, and I want to hold my feet as long as possible. If I don't have to go down, I won't. Might tick some players off in practice, but if they're not scoring, they can't complain. So, but, you know, I'll never not work. It's not an antidote to, you know, laziness or anything. It's just, you know, if you're going to beat me anywhere and it's going to be five hole and you're not shooting five hole, why would I go down? And right. my coverage has to be that with my size. And, you know, this year I've actually had a few, I mean, they're just knucklers or floating shots. I remember Winnipeg, like a fadeaway that just went through a screen, went over me, and I'm at the top of my crease and on my knees and it floats in. LA a couple weeks ago off a draw, fadeaway through a screen, tips my shoulder and goes in. And it's just, I'm looking at Jake, I'm like, I have to go down because it's through a screen, but I'm like, if I'm 6'5", that's hitting me in the collarbone. Like, there's times where it just feels like, oh, like, you know, I love to use my feet and as much as I can, but it doesn't work as much as I would like because you still have to play the game and I like to be athletic as possible. And
yeah,
some of those are just hard to track. But no, I think, you know, obviously with me being a little bit more, I don't know if you still can call it old school or hybrid, would probably be a better, you know, usage of it. I find that, you know, when guys on the team even come in different shootouts and you go down to Jake, you go down on me and, you know, they're looking to go somewhere and it's just standing up hitting me. It's probably a little bit confusing for sure. But I think the nicest thing that we both do is we work on our feet. I think that's one thing that he's really progressed in, and he was never bad at it. It was just more, I'm love to skate and do goalie drills and, you know, your crease movement stuff. And he loves to obviously work on his reverse and his slides and his positioning. And I kind of get myself out of trouble with my ability to skate. So it's almost a perfect tandem in the sense that, you know, the drills that I work on help him and the drills that he works on help me, and probably makes Reese's job a little bit easier because no matter what he does, somebody's getting something out of it. But I think that's, you know, what the trio we have is why it works so well. It's a pretty even keeled mentally between all three of us, and we all want to get better. And, you know, like any tandem, you know, you want guys to go in the net, you want to be successful. And, you know, with our team clinching a playoff berth and the wins we have, I mean, it might be a down year on what they call the number side of it, but, you know, I don't think anybody in the league is going to complain when your team's, you know, a point out of the president's race. And regardless if we both have a close to 3 goals against average, you know, it's a team sport and we're finding ways to win. If we have to give up 3 in a 900 every night to be top of the league and a threat, I don't think anyone inside the hockey world is going to care, except for some of the comment section coaches I find out there that like to look at numbers and no context.
Well, for the comment section coaches, the adjusted numbers that factor in for quality both paint a very positive picture. Thank you very much. And by the way, 900, we're hitting the point where 900's going to be league average at pretty soon, for crying out loud. Like, it's at the end of the day, there is no way. I've come to this point, Scott, where I barely even look. It used to be I never looked at goals against average, and now I barely look at save percentage. Like, from one team to the next, depending on your defensive environment and what you face, it might as well be apples and oranges.
Yeah, I can't stand that new GSAX. I don't get that stat. I get it. I just don't understand why it has any value when there's no threat. If Ovechkin's taken 61 timers from the top of the circle and you put a goalie coach out there and take 61 timers from the top of the circle, there's no value change in that shot. If it's a screen, if it's momentum of the mid in your end for 2 minutes, but, you know, they throw a point shot from the blue line through 8 people and it hits a skate on the back door and goes in, that's a negative goal. Like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I get why they have it, and maybe I'm going to be a complainer on it because it hasn't been maybe the best year for me and Jake in that sense, but it just doesn't value the sport to me in any sense. It doesn't take into consideration screens or tips or any of that, does it?
Well, there's one company that does, and that's ClearSight. And guess what? It was founded and created by a former NHL goaltender, Steven Valiquette, who wants to make sure he adds as much of that context as, I think, what you're talking about. You need as much context as possible. But even within that, even if you can add screens and tips, and they have, when it comes to screens, I think they have 4 or 5 different types, layered screens, defensive, like multiple types. So they're doing their best to give as much context as possible. Nobody talks about time and space.
Yeah.
Systems. It will never be like, because there are times as a goaltender, right, where you're reading off your own defenseman and maybe they don't do what they're supposed to or expecting to. And we're not complaining about it as goalies, but it happens. And you're where you're supposed to be. Puck goes in anyways. That's never accounted for. Whether a guy's at the dot with his head up looking and nobody with a stick on him versus a guy at the dot who's being checked heavily, has a stick on his stick, is under pressure with no time and space. Those are 2 totally different shots.
Yeah. No, I just find that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's never going to be picture perfect on either side of it. I just think it's, you know, but it's funny because no one in the actual room or goalie coaches or goalies ourselves care about it. It's all the outside sources that don't watch the game and look at a number sheet and they're like, oh, well, XYZ has -5 goals against this year, so he's been trash. But it's like, I had the best year of my career. I'm 16-5 or whatever it is in 20 something starts. Like, how are you upset? Even if I have a 4 goals against average and my team scores 5 and we give up 4 a night, I ain't upset. But obviously there's apples to oranges in every situation, and this is one of them.
Damn media. That's what it is. It's us and the damn media. It's our fault.
It's you.
It's us.
I gotta hang up now.
Okay. Well, hey, but you know what? The irony is that's why we started Pro Reads. That's why that's why we started that, in part because one was, you know, what it's become is this great tool for young kids to see how much information you guys process in real time when you make these decisions, when you read and anticipate the game. And it's been remarkable. Like I said, I can't thank you enough for doing a segment with us. We'll have to get you back on again one of these days, although I'm already getting you for enough time today. But also because we would see the internet goalie coaches, you know, that crowd criticize decisions like to do a reverse or to not do a reverse or to. And I always felt like until you've actually talked to the goalie about what he was thinking and what that process was like, you just can't judge.
Yeah. And it's hard to also, there's 64 of us in the world right now doing it or
and doing it
call
different.
It 70 and never, and none of them do it the exact same.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, it's a great sport. Everyone plays it. There is a very highly, I find the jump in the highly skilled players is in the last 3 to 4 years has jumped exponentially from 4 or 5 years prior of how quick the game is, how good they are at shooting. Every kid coming in can play the game as the top tier guy. There's a few guys that separate themselves, but there's no longer, you know, when you get a fourth line out there, that's just, you're going to get six cookies on net. It's, you know, the fourth line guys have just as much skill as the guys that are playing top minutes. It's just, there's not enough mouths to feed.
Yeah.
So you got some guys in.
Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say there's guys in practice that are on our, you know, fourth line or even extras and stuff. And they come in, they wire the puck. You're like, how do you not have 30 goals? It's a tight checking league, but it's just like these guys have skill. I mean, I think that funny video, was it Jeff Carter dressed up and went into like a men's league game and he like was in like Cooperalls and stuff and no one could touch the puck. But I guarantee if he had a bad shift, there was 40 people on social media hating on him. But it's like he goes out there with the average folk and, you know, you can't even sniff the puck, let alone touch it.
So facing that and that rapid rise in skill. And the other thing I do like to go back to the save percentage conversation. They're not wasting any of those opportunities. Like there's never been more skill in the NHL lines 1 through 6 and defensively. Like you've got them. You've got players like that on Dallas, like incredible offensive defensemen all around the league. You got a bunch there in Dallas, but they're not just throwing pucks at net without purpose. Like there's so shot totals are going down, but the percentage of those shots you guys face as goalies, the quality of them as a percentage of total shots, it's getting harder. Is I guess what I'm trying to say.
I mean, they're like, you know, take an example of that Vancouver team last night that Otter played. Like you play them, I don't know if they've ever gotten over. I don't know what they have, but I don't feel like they've gotten over 30 shots on us in a long time. And there's times when they have 18, but they score 4, and you're like, oh, like you had a bad. You look at it like, shit, I had a terrible night. But you're like, maybe if you thought that way, but like I actually had a great night. They had 18 shots, but 13 of them could have went in, because they just look off. Grade A guy's gonna pull the trigger. Nope, I'm gonna hit the next layer. I'm gonna pull the trigger. No, he goes back to the other guy on a weak side shot, and you're like, they could have shot 3 times in that one situation, but they looked off until it's an absolute grade A plus until they take it. And then you get other teams, you know, Carolina slings the puck to the net. They're like, oh, well, you got 35 shots. Like, yeah, but 28 of those could have been off someone's shin pad and in because they just sling it through traffic.
Yeah.
And it's a hard night and they don't stop. They're firing it. Like they're hoping for that, right? They're throwing it off a shin pad for a reason, because there's not many times you're beating goalies clean anymore. And there's just different ways to go about it. There's the shot, quantity team, and then there's a shot quality team. And there's not a lot that really sit in the middle and just, you know, give you 8 dump-ins from the red line anymore where you can just pad the numbers.
No, that's just in beer league. And I usually let a couple of those in anyways. So what are those conversations like? You talked about, you know, like the people judging goals and stuff and looking at, what are they like when you're watching with Reeser? Like, give me a little quick glimpse into how a video session might work the following day when you're breaking down a goal, when you are breaking down how you played, you know, on nights where maybe the math doesn't look as good as you felt.
I think Reeser does an unbelievable job at just being, you know, an advocate for his guys. I don't know if, you know, and I've heard it from other people and coaches in the room. They're like, you know, I don't think you guys understand how hard he fights for, you know, shot clocks and, you know, obviously advantages for us, or, you know, in harder conversations of how well we're doing.
Yeah.
And he reiterates that in video. So, I mean, he doesn't usually like to show the goals, but I've kind of gotten him to showing the goals because I like to break it down. And he's, you know, comes out to me after a game, you know, great game, good win or whatever. And then, you know, probably my second talking point is the goals. Like, Anthony's, yeah, but you did good. I'm like, I know, but I don't need to, in my mind, I don't need to do any better on the ones I stopped. I want to do better on the ones I missed. And I like to break it down because I like to get it off my chest. Okay. And I think that's been one thing over the last couple of years that he's maybe had to switch a little bit, is we have to talk about the goals. and I like to see them in video and kind of things, just because it, to me, it's almost like a, you know, you're cleaning the dishes, you got to get the dirt off and go about it. And that's kind of how my mind likes to erase it. But he's always, you know, first one, you know, he's always got his notes on the screen, you know, great handle here, great positioning. Look at your checkoffs. I mean, the big thing that I find when I play well is I have to work, and that's not just up downs. It's checkoffs. It's a lot of shuffles. It's, you know, moving my feet and just not sitting in a reverse. Like my whole, I guess, mantra of my game when I'm well is working is head checks, a lot of shuffles, not getting planted, a lot of, you know, grabbing my feet back as quick as possible if it's in dead zone areas and like the corners and things like that. And then trying to, you know, quickly play the puck behind the net. If I get back there and hold on to it, usually a little bit more chaos ensues. So doing everything quick, but I just think when I get to, you know, an aggressive use my feet kind of check off mentality, there's not many nights where I'm going to, you know, have a bad outing when I'm properly working.
This one might be better suited for a pro reads one of these days, but when you talk about head checks, obviously you mean looking off the puck. Advice for young goalies on when you can do it, because I have seen a lot of young goalies, like right up to higher levels, like prospect levels, that, you know, the goalie coaches of the world at the NHL level see them and say they don't do it enough. They're not looking off the puck enough. Advice on, you know, when to look for those moments, when it's safe to, you know, look away from the puck and scan the ice and make sure you're taking note of where everyone is and what hand they are and all those important pieces of information.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it's a personal thing that I do differently, but every face-off I have, you know, a count. Is it four lefties, one righty? Is it three and two? Is it a one-timer up top? Is it, so, I mean, if you even want to use this clip next time we do it, we were playing LA, my last start, and it was late, early-ish in the third, maybe 5-6 minutes into the third, I had counted the rush, and it was two lefties, one righty, or sorry, two lefties, one righty, and they were in our zone. Puck got rimmed around a couple times, and I didn't have a chance to check. And we got into like a scrum on the wall. Puck was pinned, and I saw the righty's hand, and I was like, okay, found the righty. And right as I kind of said that to myself, the puck popped out, and they threw it to the slot all alone. And I'm like, it's a lefty. It has to be. There's no one else on the ice that isn't a righty. And I saw that guy popped out. He went. I took away middle. He went lefty back into my low glove, sealed it. Big save. They had just scored. It was 4-1 with like 16 minutes left. But it was just one of those situations where that pays dividends for me. Because even in like a three-man rush, if I have a righty and everyone else is a lefty and the righty made the pass, that righty is on my back door. The only other option is a lefty 1T back to the middle if they went weak side. So I always check hands, and that's a big thing for me. And I check that early. I check that on line changes. If they're in a rush and they do a delay, I look off to the bench and see who's coming. Is it a lefty? Before games, the lineup board always has, you know, a count. And if I know there's only three righties and two of them are defensemen, everything's coming from my left side. I'm big on hands. I like that. It just kind of gives me a little more confidence of where I want my pushes to go. But as for when to check off, obviously rushes, you want to know numbers. So if you have a guy, you know, a team breaking out to 3-on-2, you got two guys wide, it's a quick check. You can kind of see the whole thing breaking down. Obviously after saves into rebounds, if it's going to the weak side and everyone's shifting over, I like to check off net. If they rim the puck and it's going to a D-man, I always look off to the backside if we have coverage. If right. Someone off the weak side wall is beating our guy back door and you have a lefty to a righty back door, a lot of the times that shot's going off net for a tip. Stuff like that. I mean, there's times you can't, but you get frozen. But I mean, the most you can do if there's a guy in the corner and most of the time they're not shooting threats, they got a guy in the high slot, it's just a quick check to see where he is. If they don't make the pass, you already knew he was there. I think the thing that gets guys a lot is when you don't know someone's there is when they score on you.
Right.
When you get surprised, right? It's like everything hurts more when you don't see it coming. So I think, as you know, obviously there was a time in San Jose, it was a tough game mentally with, you know, the crowd and how kind of boring it was. But that Zetterlin came over the blue line and I was a little bit late on a check and I was like, shit, I should check my weak side. I checked weak side. He pulled up at the blue line and as I was looking back, the puck was in the air. And it wasn't like a dangerous thought. He just kind of threw it towards the net and I quickly got a blocker on it. It was probably going to miss the net, but it kind of caught me by surprise. And I was like, shit, if that would have went in, it would have probably been one of the worst goals given up in the league this year. But But it was just, I was late on my check and I'm like, oh, now I need to check. And he was probably looking for a change and just slung it towards the net. But, you know, there's situations where, you know, sometimes you get a little bit of tunnel vision and they go back door and you just got to hope that you're quick head on it and you get in the right position. But the most you can, or the as much as you can find people, obviously, I think it gives you a lot of options to read the game better.
Funny because I'm like, that is just gold, by the way. I'm going to pull that whole clip and like go look for examples. It's going to become separate articles on the site. It's just absolute gold, Scott, for young kids to hear that. But you talked about working. When you're at your best, you're working. And I thought of physical. You know, you talked about getting up off posts and not staying down and things like that. But you're working mentally the whole time. And it sounds like that's the key, right? Like when you, as soon as you relax in a building that is, you know, like a morgue, frankly, in San Jose right now, as soon as you're not engaged mentally, that's when something like that can happen to you.
Yeah. And it's hard. You know, I think a thing that I've kind of almost dug more into is, you know, a golfer's mind, right? It's him and the ball four nights in a row and he can't make a mistake. But in between shots, he's got 2 minutes or 10 minutes of walking, and then he's got to focus back in. And there's some nights where you don't get a shot for 8 to 10 minutes, and then you get a breakaway or something like that. And it's just like, you know, for them not to shank the ball for four straight rounds and be as good as they are, you know, in that same aspect, we had a period where you're on a power play or a penalty kill and you get six shots in 45 seconds. And then there's other nights where, you know, you get out of the first period, you have one shot. And it's just like, you know, that mental aspect to stay in it. I find that when I'm working and, you know, challenging myself in that aspect, I find that I don't really think and like get into that, you know, dead head space, for lack of a better term, and then just kind of get lulled to sleep. It's more like, okay, every time they come in, even if I don't get a shot, I'm checking off, working off my post, I'm shuffling, I'm staying, you know, square to it the best I can. And finding the puck through screens is the hardest thing in this league that I think has become, because of the layered screens, because of the size of people, how quick the puck moves. They have options. You know, you get a team that rolls in the D zone and your team gets forced into a man on man and guys are peeling off on other sides and they're interchanging and drop passing. And you're trying to, you know, obviously stay on puck, but also know, okay, now the righty and lefty have switched sides. They're no longer one timers, but the guy that wasn't a one timer is now a one timer. And you're just trying to find everybody. And you got, you know, 6'5" forwards in front of you that are trying to screen you. It's work. And, you know, I don't think that gets enough credit for how good some of us are at finding pucks through screens and keeping your positioning with how much it gets rolled around and moved around. But I think that golfer mind is also something that might actually like kind of, I guess, reiterate to us with just them having to step out and step in every time that they have to take a shot.
It just keeps you mentally engaged in those. And like you said, if you're thinking like that, you're thinking about process and you're in the moment. Because the other part about golfing that I always make the analogy to goaltending is it's really easy. I heard Jake say it the other day, last night, and I know I read a quote where he'd said it last week, as he was trying to reset a little one shot at a time mentality. You know, and I've actually used to cover PGA Tour and talk. I've actually ghost wrote a couple chapters of a book for a guy up here, and that was sort of the philosophy. And it's so easy to say, man, like next shot mentality, one shot, like focus. It's so easy to say, but it's so hard to do. But by focusing on all the other little things that lead up to it, it sounds like that's part of keeping you engaged for when that next shot does come.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, you know, a lot of guys visualize. I do, but not as in depth as, you know, some of the stuff I've seen and heard people talk about and things like that. But it's obviously, you know, one of those things where you have to find a way to not get lulled to sleep by a boring game or a boring atmosphere. And so it kind of makes me go back to, you know, Marty Brodeur and the swarm defense and the trap and getting 17 shots a night and only giving up two and staying engaged. I know he played the puck a ton to probably what he probably had more fun playing the puck than he did stopping it. But, you know, just how those guys got through it, where, you know, you see most guys excel with more work just because it's your rhythm's there, you're up, down. You know, we've played goalies this year that have, you know, use that goalie term against us, and it's the best game you see them play. But then you play them again, you don't get as much work, and it's like, oh, well, we've dominated them today, and you dominated us. And I've done it to teams. You know, I played Edmonton early this year, and they put up 59 or something, and it's one of the funnest games to play in because you're like, I'm just constantly working. I don't got to wait for anything. Where you know, I get into San Jose the other night and it's 12 shots through 40 minutes and you're just like, can you shoot on me? Like, I'm off the puck, actually.
Give me one, please.
Yeah. So, but no, I mean, it's every night's different. And that's, you know, the challenge of this league, to be consistent in all different formats is definitely a challenge.
Well, I love it. Being good when you're not busy is a challenge for everyone. So it's great advice to have. The other one, I just want to go to the golf analogy, because again, you know, Jake mentioned it the other night, like he felt like he was letting the game come to him. And much like golf, goaltending might be one of the few positions in all the sport where you can't just try harder. Would you agree with that? And is that something that you've had to learn to manage too? Because you can't just go out there. You can work harder in practice. You can do like that. But once a game starts, you can't chase it. You can't be like a forward who's having a tough night and just decide to go throw a big hit to get themselves into it. Like,
yeah,
you know, like how do you find that balance?
I find that, you know, earlier on in my career and, not even earlier on, honestly, in the last couple of years, like there's times where you're like, all right, I'm ready to go. Game starts. They got two in your first 10 shots and you're like, I'm not even having a bad night. I feel good. But then you like in your mind, you're like, all right, let's go. Like that's it. They're done. But then you get to the point where it's like, I'm going to push hard. They make a pass from the goal line to the blue line. You like try and aggressively push and get zoned in. And then they go to the weak side and you make another hard push. Then they throw it and it hits something and goes in. You're like, well, what the hell? Like, I'm working so hard here. Like, that was my best two pushes of the night. I'm top of my blue paint. I'm, you know, doing everything. I shifted properly and it's in the back of your net. And then you're like, kind of like steamrolling. Like, all right, well, now you got to work harder. Like, instead of it just being like, okay, like, do the proper work and go back to your process. And, you know, there's not every time it's a bad goal. It's just the way the game works. But there is times when you tense up and you try and work harder, you take more ice, and all of a sudden they're on a 2-on-1 and you're 2 feet outside of your blue paint for no apparent reason. They make a pass and it's a backdoor tap in, and you're like, well, shit, like I was working so hard. But like we said, the harder you work, sometimes it's not like you got to chop wood faster. It's, you know, you just got to wait for it and continue the process and work in the whatever game plan that you've come up with to have a good night. And, you know, that's another hard battle. But I think, you know, like I said earlier, if I can do the things that I've set out for me to do to succeed with that, you know, working mentality and head checks and proper positioning. And, you know, I work hard. I sweat, I think, just as much as anybody. I think me and what I've heard from Bobrovsky might lead the league in sweat rate losing. But
how much are you dropping?
Oh, I'm practice. I'm like 7 to 10, and games I'm 10 to 12, depending on the workload. I don't know. I just feel like I'm in a sauna suit half the time. Wow. There's not a lot of
warm building. Warm building in Dallas too when you're playing at home.
Yeah, I don't know. I've worked with, you know, nutritionists and our sports science team and stuff. And the day after, I swell up because I got so much sodium in me trying to retain water. But it's just for whatever reason, I'm one of those heavy sweaters. But
have you had to adopt a plan for that? I've had that question from like guys that are moving up to junior and they're like, they're having dehydration and cramping issues. And they've reached out to us like, hey, is there any advice? I've actually linked them up with guys like Jaguar who went through that in his career. Other guys, I'm trying to think of Dan Ellis he was 175 pounds and would lose 12 in a game, right? Like to try and help these young goalies find ways. What's the key for you?
So I did a sweat rate test with the University of Detroit Mercy. There was a lady that worked at our gym. We did like a DEXA scan and a sweat rate test. And it was a couple years ago, but I feel like the numbers were like, if you were to have, I think she just used like the Propel drink because they had, I don't know if they had 100 milligrams of sodium or something in it, but she's like, if you were to do an hour workout and then you were just to drink Propel as your sodium intake without adding any salts or anything to it, so you would have to drink like 36 Propels after an hour workout to replenish the sodium level that you lost in like my sweat rate thing. Then that's when I added in, you know, we have like Live Pure and Element Teas and Relight and all those different salts around the room now. And I load up that. I load up a carb powder because a lot of it too is if you're not replenishing carbs with sodium or even salt, and you're just drinking water, you're actually not doing anything for yourself. So now, I used to just do a ton of water with salts. And Angie Ashy, who runs Elite Nutrition, work with her in the summer. She does a lot of MLB stuff. She got a few books for viewing your body and stuff. I feel like I'm going to ruin her book name. I might look it up here real quick, but
you can always text me later and we can add it to the show notes.
Yeah, no, I know. It's
send her some love and some links.
Yeah, she does elite sports nutrition. So I've been working with her for years and trying to get through all that stuff. And she's just been such a useful, you know, outside source that I've done as a registered dietitian, does all her books, does a lot of athletes, things like that. And, you know, she was like, honestly, like the problem is you're probably eating a banana between periods and having, you know, one water bottle with a little bit of salt in it. She's like, you're probably getting in maybe 20 carbs to 40 carbs a game. And between, you know, the game, I would like you to almost get 100 carbs an hour with how much you're sweating and how much water you're losing. So my biggest thing now is I'm getting, you know, calories in with carbs while playing. And it's honestly changed everything. Like I can leave games, you know, still sweat a lot. I probably dropped it down to probably 6 to 8 pounds, depending. But I used to, my ears used to pop. I used to not be able to like really want to eat after games just because you take such a shocking load to your body. I was just like, you know, even after practice, they're like, all right, we'll get some food in. I'm like, I don't want to eat. I just want to go home and crawl into bed and just like let my body reset. So honestly, it's been a lot better since we've kind of had conversations about, you know, just how much I actually need to replenish the carbs with the salts. And it's just been, you know, I'm still not the most knowledgeable person on it, but just having those people in my corner, and we've hired some new strength and nutritionists on the team this past summer that have jumped on board and helped a ton with just like fast acting carbs and those honey stingers and gel packs and stuff. And Jake and I have been taking them during TV timeouts just to quickly, you know, fix your glycogen and your sugars and all that stuff as we're going. And obviously they're the science behind it, but it's been a nice little change that I can leave games and practices now without feeling like I just got hit by a bus.
That's nice. That's probably a bonus. Hey, listen, speaking of being hit by a bus, I think I said we're going to talk for 15, 20 minutes. I just looked down. It's 40. Dude, as usual, I've taken up more time than I said I would, but you and I get talking about goaltending, all the things around it. And man, I just can't thank you enough. I really, really, really enjoyed this conversation. And whether it's nutrition or look-offs, skating, there's so much in here for the young goalies that listen that are going to take away. Scott, I thank you, man. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah, no, I like to talk. I feel like the media world's not too far away from me when my career's done. I don't know what it's going to be, but our coaches here, they joke. They're like, I feel like you're going to be like a Marty Biron when you're done. And I was like, honestly, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I feel like, you know, I like to give information back. I like to help. And obviously, you know, teaching the game to the next generation to hopefully do it better is not a bad way to go about it.
Well, I was going to ask you, first off, there's a lot more runway left in the career.
So absolutely.
Let's start with that. Yeah, like you, right. like you said, you've got a new little one at home, and we want her to get to see you play, to be old enough to sort of really appreciate what you've done in your career. So that's the first one. But is the way you talk and the way you explain and the way, you know, you like, I mean, getting to work with one of the best in Reeser, like, is coaching something when that day does come where you'd ever consider it?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I honestly would more like to be the head of the ship as a head coach. We don't have enough of those.
We need more of those.
I know. I don't know if you get enough of a voice as a goalie coach or just a goalie in general in the locker room, but no, I don't know. I do that. People bring up the panels and all that stuff every once in a while to me, but it's an unknown area yet. I think until I have to cross that bridge and figure out where I want to go, it'll be something. But people say I interview well, I talk well, and kind of can, I guess, portray my opinion without sounding too lost is quality to keep.
Absolutely. It's been excellent. And it's been our pleasure. So thanks again, Scott. Hey, enjoy one more on the road trip and then enjoy. I'm guessing just be careful driving home. You'll be in a hurry because I know how happy you will be to be back with the family. Congratulations on everything. Can't wait to watch the Stars on a long run through the playoffs. And knowing how much more it's going to mean when you get to go home and share it all.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I appreciate it. Get some of those videos and check offs, and we'll talk about it. I think that e-bug of ours, Chris Dudo, posted one the other day on Instagram. He was like, count the check offs, and someone's like, I counted 23 in like a minute clip or something. I got to go look at it. But he's a good buddy of mine now. He's our e-bug, but he's been taking like warm up videos of everybody and a ton of me and Jakey as we play. And he's like, do you mind if I post this? But he's got some funny stuff of how they move around the net and stuff. So it's been cool to see myself from a different angle in the stands.
Sounds like something else we got to put in the show notes. I love it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Boy, like my notepad is full after that. I just kept writing things down. And the hydration part is something I personally get exposed to as much. That was fascinating.
Yeah, I can't believe, like, Scott's not the biggest dude. So for him to lose that much in water on a not just like game basis, but even daily basis. So obviously he needed to come up with a plan. And as I mentioned to him in the interview, we get questions every once in a while from parents or young goalies, especially as they hit the junior age, really struggling and looking for hydration tips. We've reached out to guys like Dan Ellis. I've actually connected one of the goalies that struggled with Dan Ellis at one point to help him with nutrition and sort of hydration tips. And the ones there that Scott shared are excellent.
And in the NHL, it also depends on where you're playing, because there's humid arenas or humid parts of the country, and that can really exacerbate that issue. I love his glove position, and I love Scott Wedgwood's feet. I know right away, like without even looking at gear or anything, but I can just see one save out of the corner of my eye. I'm like, that's Scott Wedgwood.
Yeah, he's and wears a different angle glove. You know, it's funny, we talked about how he wears that different angle glove when he was first in town at the start of this season. I have that interview somewhere. Now that you've mentioned, I feel like I need to pull it out for a separate segment on Scott Wedgwood's glove.
Really, really cool stuff. What's happening over at the website, ingoalmag.com?
You know what? We got a nice new drill up there, courtesy of Cam Talbot and Mike Buckley and the Los Angeles Kings. Simple warm-up drill I've watched them do, but I couldn't help but notice during that drill, subtle with Talbot, a little more exaggerated with David Rittich on releases, just a simple skating and release drill, but a little bit of retreat, a little bit of what the Bruins would call recoil, what the Kings call motion. Had a good conversation with Buckley and Talbot about that. And so we've got that drill up, and it's, again, like Wedgwood's advice about looking off the puck and some of those different elements, it applies at every different age. This is a drill that you can do to get your feet and your hips moving at the start of a skate, get your eyes moving, your hands moving. And if you want, like the Kings, work in a little bit of that motion in your game to help you with the recovery movements. It's a good one, and it's up now at ingoalmag.com as well. A new pro reads every week, like we do, your chance to sit down with NHL goalies and see the game through their eyes, read the game through their minds, and get better for it.
Hey, Hutch, how do you stop too much retreat or too much backflow? Can you ask little Hutch if he can forward that onto the people in the organization? Because I just have a tendency, even on a static drill, just to fall back a little bit. I need to be more aggressive.
I think that for me, that always came back to, you know, we talk about the little slogans that guys put in their blocker, their on their stick, something to remind them. For me, it's a mindset thing. I always had a couple of words in my head that would remind me of something like that. One was like relaxed and aggressive, two things that are a little opposed. Nice. But the aggression for me talked about positional. There are certainly a few tricks that you can try and practice to support a goaltender working on that. But I think a drill like this is a great place to put it, because you can stop at any time and sort of say, yeah, went a little too far there. Control the situation. I think simplicity in a drill like this one is so important. As young coaches, we feel like we have to reinvent the wheel or impress somebody with all the different elements that are involved in a drill. And then you get to the National Hockey League level and you see how many of these drills are so, so simple. And I think there's a reason for that. And I think it really applies for the young goaltenders and the young coaches as well.
And in terms of that drift, recoil, motion, different people call it different things. They call it a teeter in Nashville. I do have some advice on how not to do it too much, Darren. It comes directly from Cam Talbot, and we'll share that with the rest of our audience in a future episode.
I cannot wait for that. See, that's the best part about doing the podcast with you guys. I can ask these questions anytime with you guys. I got a direct link. I don't have to email. How do we get in touch with people? How do people get in touch with us?
info@ingoalmag.com, and we can answer your questions in general. As we said before, if it's parent specific, parents@ingoalmag.com, but either way you'll get to us, and we'd be happy to have a conversation. We always love hearing from you.
Or I just fire the questions at the end of the podcast. Hey, yeah, I got one more thought. I got one more of that. You guys have a great week. We're on the stretch drive to the National Hockey League playoffs coming up in less than 3 weeks. And the CHL, the NCAA, a whole bunch of major tier two. It's all happening right now as we enjoy the wonderful world of goaltending. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks, Dan.